attributes. The, when describing the path noble truth, Buddha used the words asisa, viraga, nirodo, and then jago, then patinisago, then mukti, then analayo. So these words, what the commentator is saying here is, all these words are the synonyms of nibbana. So, all these words are the synonyms for nibbana. For in the ultimate sense, it is nibbana that is called the noble truth of the cessation of suffering. But because craving fades away and ceases, on coming to death really means depending upon death. That is, when path consciousness arises, it takes nibbana as object. Only when there is nibbana as object can path consciousness arise, and only the path consciousness abandons the mental defilement. So, nibbana is called fading away, and nibbana is called cessation. Actually, fading away means the cause of fading away, the cause of cessation. And because there comes to be the giving up, etc., of that craving on coming to death, and since there is not even one kind of reliance here to be dependent upon from among the reliances consisting in the cause of sense desires, etc., it is therefore called giving it up, relinquishing it, letting it go, not relying on it. So all these expressions are the synonyms for nibbana. So nibbana is not giving up actually, but because of giving up, because of relinquishing, because of letting go, because of not relying. That means nibbana is something, not just the act of giving up, or not just the act of relinquishing, not just letting go, not just not relying, but something that helps path consciousness to give up, to relinquish, and so on. It has peace as its characteristic. Its function is not to die, or its function is to comfort. It is manifested as the single signless, or it is manifested as non-diversification. Now, in the footnote, the word nipapancha is just explained. You may read it later on. And also, the footnote on coming to death, footnote number 16 on page 577, it is good to read that footnote. The Pali word is used here is agama. So, I forgot to turn it on. We have to take from the video.
You can play the video and the sound will come out.
Now, discussion on nibbana. So, these are the questions and answers, like argument. One is the opponent and the other is the defender, something like that. Question number one. Is nibbana non-existent because it is unapprehendable, like the hare's horn? So the opponent said there is no nibbana. Nibbana is non-existent because it cannot be apprehended, like a hare's horn. So there is no such thing as a hare's horn. So like that, there is no nibbana at all. And so the answer is, that is not so, because it is apprehendable by the right means. For it is apprehendable by some, namely the noble ones, by the right means. In other words, by the way that is appropriate to it, the way of virtue, concentration, and understanding of wisdom. It is like the supramundane consciousness of others, which is apprehendable only by searching of the Noble One by means of knowledge of penetration of others' minds. So it is like the supramundane consciousness. Supramundane consciousness can be apprehended only by those who have attained enlightenment or who have attained the supramundane consciousness. The higher noble person can know the supramundane consciousness of lower noble person. You know, there are four stages of nobleness, right? So those who have reached the second stage can know the supramundane consciousness of those of the first stage and so on. So like that, Nibbana can be apprehended by right means, that means by following the path of virtue, concentration and wisdom. So there is Nibbana. Therefore, it should not be said that it is non-existent because it is unapprehendable. Or it should not be said that what the foolish ordinary man does not apprehend is unapprehendable. These people may say it is unapprehendable, but it is not unapprehendable just because they say it is. And then the defender continues. Again, it should not be said that Nibbana does not exist. Why not? Because it then follows that the way would be futile. And the way means the practice, and the practice of the Noble Eightfold Path. So it would be nonsense if you say there is no Nibbana. For if Nibbana were non-existent, then it would follow that the right way, which includes the three aggregates beginning with virtue and is headed by right understanding, would be futile. And it is not futile because it does not reach Nibbana. Now, I don't like the word aggregates here. It may make you confused. I just want to say groups. Yeah, group beginning with virtue means sila, samadhi and panya. They are described as in Pali, described in Pali as sila khanda, samadhi khanda, panya khanda. But khanda here means not the aggregates like rupa khanda and so on. So we can just say groups. So the groups beginning with virtue and is headed by right understanding. It would be Buddha, and it is not Buddha because it just reached Nibbana. So you cannot say that there is no Nibbana. If you say there is no Nibbana, then the path would be meaningless. But the path is not meaningless, the path leads to Nibbana, so there is Nibbana. That is what the other meant. Question number two. But futility of the way does not follow, because what is reached is absence or non-existence, that is absence of the five aggregates, consequent upon the cutting off of the defilements. So after cutting off the defilement, the five aggregates do not exist. Then the defender said, it is not so, because though there is the absence of past and future aggregates, there is nevertheless no reaching of Nibbana simply because of that. Now here, the opponent takes the absence of five aggregates to be Nibbana. But if the absence of aggregates is Nibbana, then the past is not existent now, the future is not existent now, and so there would be Nibbana. But there is no reaching of Nibbana simply because the past is not present now, the future is not present now. As the past aggregates are not present, the future aggregates are not present. But if you say the absence or non-existence of the past aggregates are, say, Nibbana, then it will be otherwise. Then the third question, then, is the absence of present aggregates as well Nibbana? Then the absence of present aggregates are Nibbana. Could that not be Nibbana? The opponent asks. That is not so, but because it is a contradiction in terms. The present and non-existent. Present cannot be absent, right? because their absence is an impossibility, since if they are absent, their non-present follows. Besides, if even our absence of present aggregates, that would entail the fault of excluding the arising of the Nibbana element, not arising, reaching. Excluding the reaching of the Nibbana element, which results with result of past clinging left at the past moment, which has present aggregate at its support. Now, the second part of the paragraph means that that would entail the fault of excluding the reaching of the Nibbana element with the result of past with result of past clinging left and so on. That means at the moment of past consciousness, there are aggregates, right? Aggregates are in existence. If you say the absence of the present aggregate, Nibbana, then there should be no reaching of Nibbana at the moment of past consciousness, because at the moment of past consciousness, there are aggregates. You said absence of aggregate is Nibbana. Then there can be no Nibbana at the moment of past consciousness. And that Nibbana is the Nibbana with the result of past clinging left. That means Nibbana before death. There are two kinds of Nibbana. We will find it later. The Nibbana before the death of Arahant and Nibbana when the Arahant dies. So here, the Nibbana, when an Arahant dies, then there are no aggregate. So that Nibbana is possible. But this another Nibbana is not possible if you take the absence of aggregates to be Nibbana, because aggregates are not absent at the moment of third consciousness. Then the fourth question, then will there be no fault if it is non-presence of defilements that is Nibbana? Then just be non-presence of non-existence of defilements. And if that be Nibbana, then there would be no fault. Then the Nibbana said it is not so, because it would then follow that the noble path was meaningless. For if it was so, then since defilements can be non-existent also before the moment of the noble path, it follows that the noble path would be meaningless. Non-existence of the defilements. There can be non-existence of defilements before the path arises. Sometimes they don't arise, right? The defilements. Then if that is Nibbana, then the path would be meaningless. You don't have to try to reach the path, because you already have Nibbana. So this is what the what about the exponent? No. The opponent, right? Opponent and the, I don't know what to call this, defender. So this is one set of question and answers. Then question 5 says, but it's not even a distraction because of the passage. Now here, the question is on another aspect. Okay, he said, okay, that is Nibbana. But Nibbana is just the destruction of greed, hatred, and delusion. So there is no separate thing as Nibbana, but just the destruction, just the disappearance of defilement is Nibbana. He takes that way. And he points out the passage, that friend, which is the destruction of greed, of hate, of delusion, is Nibbana. Then the defender said, that is not so, because it would follow that arahantship, that means arahata phala, the fruit, also was mere destruction. For that too is described in the same way, beginning, that friend, which is the destruction of greed, of hate, of delusion, is arahantship. Now, the answer here is, if you following the passage, which is the destruction of greed, poverty, or delusion is Nibbana. Following that passage, if you say that Nibbana is a mere destruction, then there is another passage in the same sutta, which says that arahantship is destruction. So, arahantship also would be mere destruction. So it is not to be taken that way. So it is not to, we are not to take that Nibbana is mere destruction or mere disappearance of mental defilement. And what is more, the fallacy then follows that Nibbana would be temporary, etc. For if it were so, if it were the destruction of greed, hatred and delusion, it would follow that Nibbana would be temporary. That's the characteristic of being formed and be obtainable regardless of right effort. And precisely because of its having formed characteristics, it would be included in the form and it would be burning with fire of greed, etc. And because of its burning, it would follow that it was suffering. Nibbana would be suffering. Because Nibbana is the destruction or disappearance of mental defilements. Since mental defilements are formed, they are burning, and they are dukkha, then Nibbana would also be dukkha. So it should not be taken that way. If there are no fallacy, if Nibbana is that kind of destruction, subsequent to which there is no more occurrence. That means, suppose defilements are destructed. Defilements are destructed, and they don't appear again. Then that destruction could be called Nibbana. That is what the opponent wants to say. Suppose a person practices jhana, and then by the practice of jhana, he could put off or he could avoid the defilements from arising. Not by total destruction, but just by putting them away. Then, after that, he gets Nibbana. He gets enlightenment. Then, Nibbana would not be at the moment of enlightenment, but at the time when he could put off defilement. That is what is meant by the opponent. So, if there are no fallacy, if Nibbana is that kind of destruction, subsequent to which there is no more occurrence, that is not so, because there is no such kind of destruction. And even if there were, the aforesaid fallacies, that means would be temporary, have the characteristic of being formed and so on, would not be avoided. And because it would follow that the noble path was Nibbana. For the noble path causes the destruction of defects, and that is why it is called destruction. And subsequent to that, there is no more occurrence of defect. So, after the path consciousness, there are no more mental defilements. So, the path would be called Nibbana, and not Nibbana itself. But it is because the kind of destruction called cessation consisting and non-arising, that is Nibbana, serves, figuratively speaking, as decisive support for the path, that Nibbana is called destruction as a metaphor for it. You understand this? Now, there are two things. Cessation consisting in non-arising and Nibbana. Nibbana serves as decisive support, simply means as an object. So, since Nibbana serves as a decisive support for the path, Nibbana is said to be the cause, and cessation consisting in non-arising is effect. But here, Nirvana is called destruction. And that is by metaphor. You know, in the passage quoted, Nirvana is described as destruction. So destruction of greed, hatred, and delusion is Nirvana. So there, we are to understand that destruction is not really Nirvana, but Nirvana is described as destruction because it is the cause or condition for destruction. Nirvana serves as a condition for destruction. That is why Nirvana is also called destruction by a metaphor. So it is not a direct expression. There are some kinds of metaphor in this way. Say in Pali it is say let us say sugar is phlegm. If you eat much sugar you have phlegm. So people say sugar is phlegm. Something like say salt is say blood pressure. Salt is not blood pressure, but it is a cause for blood pressure. So sometimes we say salt is blood pressure. Something like that. Here, Nirvana is destruction. Nirvana is not actually destruction, but it is a cause for destruction. It is a condition for destruction. That is why Nirvana is explained, stated as destruction. So it is not direct talk. That is why in the next question, why is it not stated in its form? That means, why it is not stated directly? Why is it not called a cause for destruction or condition for destruction? Then the answer is because it is extremely subtle. So even Buddha hesitated to teach this Dharma because it is so subtle and so it would not be readily understood by the listener.
There's a problem here, because if you say that Nirvana is a cause of destruction, then Nirvana comes before destruction.
A cause for means a condition for. Nirvana does not cause as destruction, but Nirvana is a condition for destruction.
But it almost makes it sound like destruction is the next step after Nirvana. You know, the step after, the higher step.
Nirvana, we cannot say that Nirvana is past or present or future. So Nirvana is some kind of Dharma. And when path consciousness arises, and it takes Nirvana as object. And at the same time, it eradicates mental defilements. So destruction is there. Destruction of mental defilements is at the moment of path consciousness. And path consciousness can arise only when it takes Nirvana as object. If there is no such thing as Nirvana, then path consciousness cannot arise. But that is why Nirvana is said to be a condition for the destruction of mental defilements. Okay, not yet finished. Since it is, when the path is, then it is not uncreated. If it is so, then only when there is path, there is the destruction of mental defilements. So, and it is taken to be as Nirvana. So Nirvana is not uncreated. Nirvana is made by something. It is what the opponent said. And that is not so because it is not arousable by the path. That means it is not produced by path. It is only reachable by the path. That is why it is uncreated. It is because it is uncreated that it is free from aging and death. And it is because of the absence of its creation and its aging and death, it is permanent. Then, you say permanent, so there's another... there's another argument. Then it follows that Nirvana too has a kind of permanence, claim of the atom and so on. I think this is not correct. what the opponent says here is, you say Nirvana is permanent. So if Nirvana is permanent, then the atom, etc., are also permanent. The atom also, etc., are atom, etc., are taught in other philosophies. You know, there are six classical Hindu philosophies. They call darshan in Sanskrit, darshana. So in some of these philosophies, they accept the atom as the cause of creation, or atoms are the real, the ultimate truth, something like that. So atoms are taken to be indestructible, to be permanent. So if you say Nirvana is permanent, then the atoms also are also permanent, something like that. So then it follows that Nirvana has a kind of permanence of the atom. Not this. As Nirvana is permanent, so atoms, etc., are also permanent. And the answer is that is not so. Because of the absence of any cause that brings about its arising, here it is also not correct. Because of the absence of any reason, not cause, that can prove its truth, not that brings about its arising. Now, in this passage, the terms used in Hindu logic are used. And so you have to understand Hindu logic in order to understand this passage and the sub-commentary on it. So it's very difficult. The word hetu means reason. Are you familiar with the syllogism in logic? I wrote a book on the Hindu syllogism in Burmese, and I've forgotten about that. So I have to read it again to remind me. So that is what is called a syllogism in Hindu logic. And that is actually, you assert something, like the classical example is, there is fire on the mountain because there is smoke. Wherever there is smoke, there is fire. For example, a kitchen. And there is smoke on the mountain. Therefore, the mountain has fire. So these are the five stages of syllogism. So in order to make other people convinced, you have to use these five steps. So the first one is just a statement of the fact. So there is fire on the mountain. Then why? Somebody may ask. Because there is the smoke. How are smoke and fire related? Then he says, wherever there is smoke, there is fire. For example, you see the kitchen. Not kitchens in the United States. You use gas here, so there's no smoke. So wherever there is smoke, there is fire. For example, kitchen. And now there is smoke there on the mountain, so there is fire on the mountain. So this is called syllogism. And the second sentence is called hetu, reason. Why do you say that there is fire on the mountain? You say, because I see the smoke there. So that sentence is called hetu. So that is not cause, that is a reason given by the person. So here, because of the absence of any reason, there is no reason to prove that atoms are permanent. Because Nirvana has permanence, then these, that is, the atom, etc., are permanent as well. And the next question is, because Nirvana is permanent, the atoms are also permanent, then the answer is what? That is not so, because in that proposition, the characteristic of logical reason, not cause, logical reason is not valid, not does not arise. So, because the characteristic of logical reason is not valid. In other words, to say that Nirvana is permanent is not to assert a reason why the atom, etc., should be permanent. So, because according to Theravada Buddhists, the permanency of atoms and others are not proved. Say they are not true. So here to say that because Nirvana is permanent, they are permanent. It is not a valid reason, valid statement. So the reason here is not valid. Then they are permanent because of the absence of their arising, as Nirvana is. That is not so. Because the atom and so on have not been established as facts, according to Buddhists. The aforesaid logical reasoning proves that only this, that is Nirvana, is permanent, precisely because it is uncreated. And there should be a period there. And we should strike out "and," and then "it" should begin with the capital letter. It is immaterial because it transcends the individual essence of matter. That is another statement. So, questions 9, 10, and 11. In these questions and answers, the logical terms are used, and we have to understand Hindu logic to understand this. These passages clearly. And then it is described as immaterial. So Nirvana is nama or arupa. Although it is not consciousness, it is not mental factor, but it is nama, it is arupa. And then the Buddha's goal is one and has no plurality. Actually, what is meant here is it is a single goal, because there is no difference in goal of Buddhas, etc. Buddha's goal or Buddha's enlightenment, Buddha's destruction of defilements and others' destruction of defilements are the same. So here, the Buddha's goal is one and has no plurality. I think that is not so good. So there is, it is a single goal because there is no difference in goal of Buddha, etc. And then he describes the two kinds of Nibbana. Nibbana with result of past clinging left, and Nibbana without result of past clinging left. That simply means Nibbana while the Arahant is living, before death, and then Nibbana at the death of an Arahant. Before he dies, he still has the aggregates, he still has his body and mind. So they are called the result of past clinging. So with the result of past clinging means while he is alive, and without result of past clinging, that means when he dies. And then, paragraph 74, because it can be arrived at by distinction of knowledge that succeeds through untiring perseverance, and because it is the word, not world, the word of the omniscient one, Nirvana is not non-existent as regards individual essence in this ultimate sense. For this is said, because there is an unborn and and unbecome and unmade and unformed. This is a famous passage quoted by many people. So this is a section of the definition dealing with the description of the cessation of suffering, the third noble truth. We cannot go to the end of the fourth noble truth tonight. Okay.
Bhante, back on paragraph 69, you said that arhatship, that really means what did you say?
Arahatta phala. I mean, you know, part of an arahant and part of arahantship and fruit of arahantship.
And here they mean?
Fruit.
Oh, here they mean fruit. So they want to say that that's the same as nibbana, and then the point to the system is not the same.
No. Nibbana is separate. Dhamma. And part is one thing, fruit is another thing, Nirvana is yet another thing.
Still,
did you say word was for
that's
well,
right. Yes.
Word?
That's right. Yes. So we'll cross forward into Paticca Samuppada next week. Where's the cameraman? Yeah. But I must ask him.